My friends, fellow actors, I feel the good in what you have done, what you do. This has been a hard year for all of us. Those in this room, those not in this room, I'm so proud that we've gotten here in solidarity with all of our other unions.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
I'll have what she's having.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
So, would you rather be recognized by everybody? Let's say, for example, you are a soccer player now, and you needed more recognition from people, the whole world in general, or would you rather have recognition from other footballers, if that makes any sense?
I think recognition from your peers has a special feeling.
It has a special
feeling. These are people that, these are people that know what this is all about. You know, you're not necessarily, you know, there are many things that appeal to people who are not necessarily experts or people that understand necessarily certain things. If I can use actors, for example, an actor might be more popular than another because, you know, he just has that appeal, or he's more handsome. You know, he has that, the standard look, he's tall, he has the, you know, Antonio hair and all that stuff.
Antonio hair.
An actor might... Fabio. I think it's Fabio, yeah.
Fabio, right? Oh, okay. I thought there was something called
that guy that had muscles and blonde hair.
Right.
The darling of all the MLB books those days, yeah. So, you know, someone might have the looks, and just for that reason, you know, he gets awards. You know, he just gets picked over other people in awards. When your peers say that you are the best,
okay,
as all of them come together and say you are the best, it has that. I think for me, I don't mind the other ones, but I will also appreciate my peers saying that, okay, in this our craft, this was the best. You are the best.
I think it has a good feeling too, really. I believe that it is, but it is a feeling. Like the recently concluded SAG Awards that just happened, you know, last week. And luckily enough, it was live streamed on Netflix. That was the only way I could have watched it, because I don't know any other place I could have watched it. And, you know, and you would see some of the actors would come out when they would take the award after they say the actor goes to, and then they would say, we are so thankful. They thank their community. And it appears to be something special. Some of them, from my understanding, is that they cherish it even more than the Oscars. And my question is this. The Oscars is like recognition. You know, the Oscars is the Academy of Arts and Science, if I am correct. And these are the people giving you this recognition. Then I know, like, you know, the Golden Globes and all the other ones, people vote, industry people, there are different pockets of people that vote. But as far as movies go, the actor basically, as in the Screen Actors Guild Awards, basically recognizes your craft. But does your craft translate to industry money, as the case may be right now? Because we have seen where money is more viable now than just the craft itself. And we see whereby, you know, there are actors who really cannot act. But they are popular. And you could find that maybe they were musicians before that were so popular. So they have this huge following. Imagine for an example now, like say, Taylor Swift. Very perfect example now. Let's say Taylor Swift now, you see this new blockbuster movie, coming out and they say she's going to be the main star of the movie.
Mm.
Now, the discussion, that movie may make like $100 million box office weekend if care is not taken. But does it mean that the people have the do you think that they have the skill set to act, or is it just the popularity that is bringing people to the cinema to watch? And I believe, of course, that in as much as you want to value your craft and your, you know, love from your peers and everything, a little bit of public love is not so bad for the business.
I see where you're going. You know, it always makes sense to, you know, to win the money game. But, you know, there are people like, for example, when you brought Taylor Swift, a good example would be the WWE stars, people like Dwayne Johnson, who have, you know, The Rock came with his huge following from, and there was a time if Dwayne Johnson was in your movie, guaranteed, you know, it's going to make a hit. So there are people like that, you know, who seem to be able to streamline both worlds perfectly. You know, they're both, some people say that they're not necessarily good actors, but at the same time, when they're in a movie, the movie seems to be a hit. That thing that they know how to do, they seem to do it perfectly well. And I think it's something that, you know, that means, that takes a lot of, you know, paying attention to. Well, personally for me, you know, I'm not, I never had any skill of that sort. So when people praise me for my skills, I'm always very pleased. But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure a lot of people prefer the Oscars to the SAG, but, you know, I think it's a bit of both. You know, you want to have the Oscar, which
if you want to look at it,
made the money, but you also want the SAG so that your peers say that, okay, you're not here just because you're a WWE star or a music star or you're a football star.
But as far as making money, as far as movies go, it's not about this. It boils down to, look, we're talking about, hey, Avengers, $700 million box office. This is exactly, that's what we're talking about, man. So the issue is this. It doesn't really matter. I don't know. I don't know who to ask.
But the actor doesn't have the problem because the actor has been paid. So as an actor,
the actor doesn't have the problem. The SAG Award, I feel like,
it's the producer that cares about whether the movie does well at the Oscars.
Yeah.
The actor just wants to get paid. If they paid you $100 million to act in a film, whether the film makes $20 million is not your business.
Yeah.
If you can get a SAG award and an Oscar at the same time, hey, usually for you to get an Oscar, that means the film made money. Usually. You know, I don't think there's any person that's won an Oscar for a film that tanks. You know, so for the actor, it's just about winning as much awards. So if you get an SAG, that's great. If you get only an Oscar, that's great. If you get both, wow.
The better, actually, the more you get. And I actually feel like it's a trend, you know, it's actually a trend going towards, like, it normally moves towards, like, you know, award season, like, you know, January, you're talking about the Golden Globes and all those early awards. Then you do the SAGs and Tony Awards, and you go to the Oscars and all that. So sometimes, although the Tony Award is not really about, I think it's more of stage plays and, you know, Broadway shows that you see in the Tony Awards, but you would find more like movies that win in the Golden Globes and all those TV shows that are doing well in the Golden Globes. Most of the times, if they talk about it more in the SAG Awards, chances are they will be mentioned or they would win in the Oscars. For example, we're talking about Oppenheimer now. And at least you saw who won it. Killers of the Flower Moon. To me, that was my best.
Lily, I
was
Gladstone.
So happy. Yeah, I was so happy when Lily Gladstone won it, because, I mean, sometimes there are TV faces you see. It's not like, it's not a supermodel thing. Like you say, oh, this person was in this movie. But there was this charm she brought to the role.
You know what I thought when I saw her?
Yeah.
Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa. Yeah, she has that.
She has that thing.
That face.
You can't necessarily put something. You can't see what it is.
You can't see how to smile. Yeah. Yeah, I think I
that,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
exactly
yeah.
what came to my mind.
She just says that. I don't know whether it was part of the acting or maybe just that's just how she is. Because the role, the way she just played that role, and you know, that expressionless and that very slow smile. And but I mean, you never negate the work of very good film directors that bring out the best in actors, especially you know, communicate the role you're trying to portray to the audience at the end of the day, especially in that particular story at the end of the day. But I know that the Oscars come out on 10th of next month. No, are we in March already? Yeah, this month, because this episode would be dropping on Friday. So I think it's 10th of I think it's 10th of March, right? So
yeah.
At the Oscars. And I think at the end of the day it's gonna be the usual suspects. It's not going to be anybody. I don't think anybody will just come from a strange place and win the awards. Anyways, hello everybody, and thank you for listening to us. I am MC Edem, and I am with Onyeka Onyekpe. Onyeka, how you doing? So, I mean, we've just been chatting and talking about, you know, the recently concluded SAG Awards that just happened, and basically just comparing us. I think that, you know, it's a good award for industry practitioners, like every award, you know, like when your peers recognize you and everything. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, I mean, you can just take Ludacris from his rap game and put him in a movie and everybody will be there. But I think he can, in all fairness, I don't see him to be one of those fakes. I think he can act for the most part.
Yeah, he is.
He can act. I'll give Ludacris that one, because it's not like, you know, most of the times when you see people like filmmakers turned musicians turned actors, comedians turned actors, first thing you're asking is, can they act? I mean, look at Will Smith. He can act. That one, you can't take that away from him. It's always in him. And you know, as far as I know, I think Kevin Hart got better. Initially, I started looking at, I used to see him with a comedic face, but I feel he too worked on his craft. And where he is now, of course, is not where he was when he like broke into film.
No. He's grown.
Yeah, he really and I think that's the best thing you can do, actually. Like, if this is what you're doing now, you should just, I mean, learn as fast as you can. There are tutors everywhere. There are people to help you and show you the ropes. But talking about that now, who are the many? There are many people I know. It's like a trend, and I think it works. As a director, would you not pick somebody that is popular than somebody who just maybe his peers recognized at the end of the day?
Well, as a director, I think it depends on your vision. You know, for some roles, all you need is a popular face. But for example, Killers of the Flower Moon. I mean, I never knew who Lily Gladstone was, and she was just she blew it off the park. I don't think I've ever seen. If she has done any work before, I don't know, but I don't think I've ever seen a better debut in the industry than this ever. She held her own against people like De Niro and DiCaprio.
Yes.
And, you know, she looks a seasoned, she looks somewhat like a veteran. And that's something that's very hard to do. So I think it depends on the director's vision, what he feels he can get from someone. You know, he might see it in one person, or he might just need a John Cena type to come and, you know, you can't see me. I get it done with, you know. So who knows, you know, but, you know, I think it's director dependent.
Yeah.
Depending on the director, depends on what they want and the role. Certain roles require just, you know, any run of the mill person. Certain roles require a particular type of person.
So, I better not forget his name. The guy who won for Oppenheimer. Oh, you know.
Cillian.
Yeah, Cillian. So, you know, I have seen him in film forever. He's one of those very not so, you know, they don't have those very
competent
punchline names.
Or unique.
They don't have those very punchline, you know, like Tom Cruise or, you know. But I have seen him in film forever. I've seen him in film. I've seen him in so many films. I think, and he always has this, you know, quiet killer dude kind of role, you know, very quiet guy, or, you know, and I've seen him in some few horror thriller kind of flicks. Some of them I can't remember, but his face is, he has been consistent over the years in film and, you know, appears in pockets of roles of movies. And then for him to win for Oppenheimer kind of like just blew up. It was a movie to, you know, to work. Christopher Nolan, he knows how to make those kind of...
Everybody was waiting for that movie. Everybody was waiting for that movie. And Cillian Murphy sort of cemented his space in the industry with his, you know, hit TV show, Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, as Thomas Peaky Shelby. Blinders, yeah.
So, as Thomas Shelby, he took, you know, he was always that competent person in movies. Either he was, you know, the bad guy that you had to be afraid of, or the stalker that, you know, would always get the job done, you know, that sort of person.
Yeah.
Just like a Tom Hardy. You know? And, you know, all these British actors, you know he's British, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know, so some of the people like him, Tom Hiddleston, Tom Hardy, Kristen Bell, you know, they're just quietly competent. You know, they don't have that flash and, you know, like you said, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is all, you know, Brad Pitt, all those people. But, you know, he quietly gets the job done. So Oppenheimer was a perfect role for him. It was perfect for him.
Yeah, at least to bring out his recognition and all that. But I, at least if nothing else, I feel like the saga was... I would be interested to see the best picture of the year for the Oscars. I am also interested in seeing who's going to get the best actor, who's going to get the best actress, director as well, because I'm looking out for these movies, especially Oppenheimer. I want to predict Oppenheimer. I want to predict
Killers of the Flower Moon,
of course. Like, outside these two movies, I want to bet it should be one of them at least.
Yeah.
You know, because on the lists, or so to speak, what is out there, but you never can tell. You know, the Academy of Arts and Science, they are looking out for something. They're always looking for something else. I mean, we've seen the history where some movies that we look at the movie and we say, what is, why? And, you know, like for Oscar movies, sometimes you see a movie that won, you say, from where? Then it's okay. Based on that, you now say, let you go and watch. And even after watching the movie, I don't know, I'm speaking for myself. Even after watching the movie, I'm like, okay, why? So I believe that it's either they are looking for something scientific, is either the story is telling something big. That's why I feel like Oppenheimer fits the role, because we're talking about the atomic bomb and all that. I think Killers of the Flower Moon, also a historical picture, you know, bringing to light certain things that happened at that particular time, you know. So, but I mean, if it's popularity, I think Oppenheimer. If it's Oscar-ish, I'm looking at Killer of the Flower Moon at the end of the day. What do you think?
Yeah.
What's your own prediction?
I agree with you, but I think I definitely feel Lily Gladstone is going to get Best Actress. That one, I wanted to bet money. She's definitely picking that up.
Really?
She's definitely picking that up. I can't tell. Between
we've seen DiCaprio, so many of this, Cillian Murphy. All the time that he's been in industry.
Don't they separate it? Either the one for female and male.
It's male. Okay, for female. Actress. You're talking about for female. Yeah. That's right.
For
that's
female,
right.
She's definitely getting female. Mm-hmm. Then for best actor. Cillian Murphy most likely should get it. but DiCaprio was quietly what he was in that movie was something else. You know, we've seen him as, you know, as a bad person. We've seen him as a good person.
Yeah.
But in this one, he had this conflict. You know, he was a bad person trying to be good while being bad. You know, it was a totally different role. And I was quite impressed, even though there's nothing I've not seen him do. But, you know, so...
Yeah.
I'm actually excited. It's been a while since I've actually looked forward to see who wins an Oscar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are award shows I follow, but I don't really like... Like, I could miss the Golden Globes and just catch up, but I like to watch the SAG Awards. Especially for me, though, it's the SAG Awards at least, and then the Oscars, if nothing else, to be abreast. The Golden Globes actually is a leader for me of things that you may have missed last year, which, you know, based on somebody's busy schedule, right? So the Golden Globe kind of tells you, okay, you were under a rock for all these things. Maybe you should find time to catch up. I know that currently I'm on a very, very rough schedule, I agree. But I know that shortly somebody will also, time will open up whereby one will be able to catch up with some of like these movies, because there's a lot. But if you know, there's so much out there right now. I don't even know how these elections are done anymore, because there's so much content out there. That it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You pretty much have to choose what. And for me, these are the indicators of, okay, this is what I should watch. For example, I think last year, was it Everything Everywhere All at Once that won?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Best Picture? I can't even remember right now, but it won a huge award, you know?
Yes, I think Michelle Yeoh won it.
Michelle Yeoh won for Actress. But Everything Everywhere, she won for Actress, but Everything Everywhere All at Once kind of won everything. It won a lot of awards, if I'm correct. Yeah. I may be mistaken, but I know that if nothing else, it was nominated for a lot. And you're looking at this year now. That was, like, I wanted to say that to say this. That was how I watched it. that was how I said, oh, okay, it's something I need to watch, because I know Michelle Yeoh, and those are some of the actors you've been seeing on TV, and when they win from a movie like that. And honestly, that was a movie when I watched it. I know that, let us not digress too far, but I have to say, Everything Everywhere All at Once. If you're listening to this podcast and you appreciate art on screen, creativity, picture, in just take your time, put it on your list and go and watch it, because I felt it's one of the satisfying films I have watched. Well, maybe it's because of the kind of weird way I appreciate stuff, but
no, it touched everything. It has a little of everything. It has action, if you're an adrenaline head. It has like you say, art. It has these layers, you know. It's saying a lot of things at the same time, you know. It's addressing a lot of issues, and you know, it has a multiverse, it has kung fu, it has guns, it has storyline, it has plot, it has family drama. It's a deep film.
Yeah,
it's a deep film. So it's something that should yeah.
I think it will appeal to any kind of, you know, audience. Somehow, somebody, there's something in it for everybody. But I kind of like the weird presentation. Which other film do you know what are the Oscars actually looking for, really, in all honesty? But I know that I've mentioned that before, but I'm thinking go ahead.
Obviously, a big production. I would think that would be one.
You know, production is everywhere, isn't it?
I don't know. You can have a lot
didn't
of
Matrix. You remember when the Matrix came out? You remember when the Matrix came out?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it was like some kind of, I think it was, I've forgotten, they won the award for the best visual effect at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Best visual effect, because they were one of the first people who were able to bring those, you know, somebody jumps and stands in the air and then they spin the camera 360 degrees and, you know, they have all those sound effects and all that. So don't you think they are looking for something new, something unique, something different?
Yes, sometimes, yes, but it's not every time. I don't think it's every year you get something necessarily unique. And with the role of AI and CGI and everything these days, almost anything that wants to be done has been done to an extent. You know, of course, yes, they'll always bring out something that'll be new, that'll shock us or wow us. But to a large extent, it's more of how these things interplay together,
right?
And the way it enhances the story. You know,
right?
It's not just CGI for CGI's sake. It doesn't enhance the story. Like Matrix, I don't think Matrix would have been as much fun without those things happening in the movie, you know, without the pausing in the air and Neo bending down and bullets whizzing past.
And the bullets, yeah.
You know, 300, the black and whites had a value. The black and white scenes had value. The whole Fassbender jumping up in the air, slow motion, to chop off a Persian hand, all those things had value. So I think most of the time it's, okay, the cinematography, yes, of everything. How does everything interplay? You know, if you're putting color here, why are you putting color here? You know, if your actor is if you're doing this in reverse, why are you doing this in reverse? And also how they bring the stories to life. And also how relevant are the stories? I think there has to be a relevance of the story to the times as well. So there are some films that might get nominated because they're addressing certain social issues. You know, I think when something about the moon, not Killers of the Flower Moon now, the one where this black guy, what?
Got yeah, the guy that was in True Detective. I know the movie.
For the life of me, I forgot his name. Where he was, you know, he had a relationship with a young boy.
With a young boy,
you know,
yeah.
They were both, stop the moon. Come on. Killers of the Flower Moon just keeps popping up in my head. Anyway, you know, it was, at that time, it was a poignant story talking about, you know, same-sex relationships and, you know, how it was very vivid. Even Brokeback Mountain, when it came out, you know, Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, that was a groundbreaking, you know, movie for how they handled, you know, relationships between the same sex at that time. So there's always something that comes up in a movie that is relevant to the times. Right. And I think for that, Killers of the Flower Moon is relevant to the times. You know, oppression, people's resources, land being taken.
Yeah.
White privilege. It shows white privilege to an extreme degree. You know? I mean, these are people that have their own resources and that's so white people saw were coming up and married their daughters and killing
it
them.
It was an amazing story.
So, you know, it's definitely a shocking story.
Very shocking story. I mean,
you know,
you see, like I always say on this podcast, you see, we don't have to be the experts, but we are the consumers and we see it.
Of course.
And we see, you see, I don't have to be some kind of very fancy movie, film, historian, pundit kind of dude or anything. I don't even have to be all of that. But I can tell you the opinion of what I feel after I watch this movie. And Killer of the Flower Moon for me was like, eh? So it was like a lot of things, you know. I was like, a lot of things happened in this film that was like, wow. I mean, could this thing be happening? And I feel that if you're trying to do a historical flick, that is where you need to be going. Because you don't, okay, you want to tell me about, let's say you want to do maybe a blaxploitation movie on, say, slavery. Everybody knows that slavery happened. So you need to be talking about, not everybody agrees, I get it, but everybody knows somehow. You want to talk about a movie that happened like the Holocaust. The Holocaust is the one I know that has Holocaust deniers and all that. So everybody knows. You understand? Everybody knows that happened. Though most people agree that happened. But at the end of the day, you want to tell a story about it. You have to be telling a particular story within the story to make a movie. Because you cannot just be documenting that this happened and, you know, and talking about reliving some of the events on film, if that makes any sense. So it's more of like, you know, Titanic ship hit the ship sank, but you are talking about the love story that happened on it, to make a film. So it's those kind of things and how you tell, because like the story of the Killers of the Flower Moon, just basically everybody knows about the Trail of Tears, for those that agree and those that don't agree, it's okay, but most people know, I have to say that when I agree about the history. But for me, like me, I was aware of that history, but it was quite shocking, some of the intricacies, monies that belonged to you and had to be handed back to you, money that was so I mean, for anybody who has not seen that movie, Killer of the Flower Moon, I was happy when Lily Gladstone won the award. For me, that was one of the awards I totally agreed with my whole being and said yes, it was well deserved. The others for me were expected somehow, but that was one that I really agree. Anyway, let's go and let's take a break real quick. A lot has been changing in with this AI. You know, we've been hearing about it everywhere. AI is in everything. But Tyler Perry recently shut down an $800 million production of his studio, or he stopped the project because of AI. We'll talk about that when we come back.
I've done a number of movies now where you go into a little booth that's 360-degree camera, and you're asked to do 30 different expressions. You know, smile.
Wow.
And then stand like this, and they could totally recreate me.
Yeah.
They could have an AI version of me. So last time I called up my lawyer and said, what happens to all those images?
Right.
After, you know, what do they do with them? They said, well, they store them.
And what do you get paid off of it?
Yeah, well, they can't, supposedly they can't use it without your permission, but it's still, you know, to go like this and like, ooh, and then you think, I can do that in person.
That was the voice of an actress called Glenn Close, explaining, I mean, if you heard her, explaining how all your pictures can be taken. They ask you to do all these expressions, all these facial expressions, and they take all your pictures, and your pictures can be used to recreate a scene.
You.
Now, there is this new technology that came out, and there's this...
Sora.
Yeah, Sora. And for anybody who has not seen that thing, I don't know about you. I will always, as always, I will always speak for myself. That thing is scary. I mean, let us leave the world of misinformation that is already existing with words. And then people will scream and shout and say, show us the evidence, you know? And people will say, okay, look at this. This is live evidence. I saw a video today somebody posted on Twitter, and I retweeted that picture. The person posted a picture of a man. Fire was burning, and a man sat inside the fire and was dancing. You know, it was the kind of picture that was taken in a village setting kind of thing. You know, doesn't look like something that had like a movie set behind it or anything. Then you have the person who posted this picture said something along the lines of, if you don't believe in juju, explain this chemistry. Something along that. And honestly, I sat down. I watched this thing. I watched it over and over and over. You know, one of those videos you say, wait, this thing is... And I think I retweeted it. I said something about it's messing with my sensibilities, which I felt I did not say it because I felt like tweeting something or Xing something, as it is so called right now. It was messing with my sensibilities. So what I said is, man, I'll just blame it on AI. Some AI somewhere created this video, because I don't understand how a man is sitting inside a fire. I don't know. I don't want to believe this is a movie set, or is it a movie set? And then if it's a movie set, then it's some AI visual effects or something, because it didn't make any sense to me. And I'm not an advocate for believing in juju. I don't know whether it's there, whether it's not there. I don't know. you know, I don't, and if it's there, I don't want to see it. I don't, you know. So the reason I find that quite fascinating is that, you know, we were just talking about Lily Gladstone and, you know, Cillian Murphy winning these awards. And are we looking at a future whereby we are not going to need these actors anymore?
We're looking at Skynet. but to be serious, yes, I think there's a possibility that studios will not need the actors or actresses anymore. The thing question now is, what is, you most likely will have to get, like, as Glenn Close intimated, get someone's consent before you can use them in a movie. So I think based on an actor's brand reputation, you know, you can say, okay, let's say, for example, you can call Tom Cruise and say, okay, Tom Cruise, okay, you know you like doing your stunts, but, you know, we're going to push the bar a little bit and create a scene where this and this and this will happen. We know this goes in line with your brand. So are you willing for us to use your imagery in this way? And I'm sure when they agree, there's some checks will be, you know, checks will exchange hands, money will be paid, and then they can use AI to go do that thing. We will get there first. Whether we'll go beyond there and have people do things that they normally would not do. For example, you don't expect to see, if I keep up with Tom Cruise, in a very raunchy, romantic sex scene, for example. You know, that is not his brand. So if you see that in a movie, most likely it's AI all the way. And I think we're heading into that realm where producers will want to push the envelope with certain actors and actresses because they have their image rights. We want to, you know, say, you know what, we're going to pay you $200 million. It's AI. We have your images. We're going to do whatever I like with it. You just go home. We'll give you this $200 million. You take it, and then we're going to make like 10 movies and do whatever we like with it.
And whatever you, we like. Because you're not...
because
whatever we like.
If somebody's giving you $200 million, I'm sure they're trying to push the envelope in what, in how much the $200 million is going to give them in terms of ROI, in terms of what they can get the actor or actress to do in the movie. With AI, they can get you to do anything. So it's all about your consent.
But wouldn't you
and
be
so
concerned?
Some actors and actresses.
About your, wouldn't you be concerned about your image and likeness?
Well,
what I mean by that is, if you understand,
okay.
Let's say I am a Hollywood actor, and of course, you know, there are actors based on their personal philosophy will not participate in certain types of movies. I'm sure you know that part now. So now, in as much as I am not ignorant of the fact that this AI matter was one of the reasons we had this writer strike that happened last year, because I'm sure that the industry itself is aware of this technology, because before a technology like that comes to what I describe as popular side, it means that it has already been in existence and it has been used. They've been using it. They've just probably figured out a way for it to come to be commercial or something, that some independent producers can use it, or some graphic artists, if such a thing. With all this AI, I don't even know what the graphic artist industry is like these days, you know. But now we are hearing this. I don't know if you ever saw an old Al Pacino movie called Simone. Simone.
I think it was Charlize Theron.
It was Simone. But for me, the main thing I remember was the story of Simone, whereby Al Pacino played part of a movie director that created an actress that didn't even exist. Computer-generated actress that didn't exist, and literally made her into a movie star. that people wanted to see Simone. And at that time, they played with all these technologies whereby, you know, and that's the thing about film.
Holograms.
They've been playing with all these technologies, and now we are here. We are here. And, you know, we've been talking about these things. Like, I don't know if you ever played one of those FIFA video games or football. Like Pele, like now, somebody like Pele who is late, you can still play with him in the game. So I'm wondering, what happens? Are we talking about, like, you know, a Will Smith that maybe we still like, and the audience in 20 years time or 50 years time or 100 years time, are they trying to keep people living forever? I'm talking about Sidney Poitier. Are they going to bring his image and likeness and still put them in movies? The thing is, the thing is, where this thing is going is making it there. And even if that is possible, which I feel is already possible, the technology is here, who is even going to get the money for all those things? And it's, I believe it will work itself out, but right now it's still mind-blowing.
Yes, it is. You brought up a very interesting angle, because I know there was a time Elvis was having concerts with a hologram. You know, I think I remember a particular concert that he performed with Celine Dion, and it was his hologram singing along with Celine Dion. And you know, this is impossible, because Elvis has long time departed the earth. So I think that is one angle. They're going to keep certain actors alive forever. You know, Tom Cruise is going to go beyond his age. Denzel is going to be saying, "My man," for the next 200 years. You know, they're going to have people like this doing all sorts of classic stars kept, you know, especially if for some reason they manage to get you to sign a particular document. For some actors, they might find it, you know, it might boost their ego to know that long after they're gone, they're going to be appearing in movies, they're going to be, you know, it's like a legacy, they're going to be there forever. But for some, I think for some who are a bit more conscious, they might find it as troubling. Because it means that the next set of actors would never emerge. We're going to be stuck in this weird loop where we just keep having the same people doing different roles over and over and over and
do
over.
Do you think the audiences will buy into that? Here's my issue. My issue here with this is that, okay, wait, understand this. There's a generation of audiences that would have appealed to, you know, Sidney Poitier or let me say Barbara Streisand, the old Barbara Streisand. I know she's still relevant. She's alive and well. I mean, they gave her an award, you know, and the recent SAG Awards. And I'm thinking about, but I'm saying that new audiences come. Are you selling some of these people? Or because if you notice, one of the constants you have in any awards now is that they will have this reel where they do a reel of the dearly departed, where they show you the pictures of people. So that for me is like an outro. Everybody is okay. You've been seeing these people on screen that you have known and loved and you have idolized as your stars, but now they are no more. So mentally, with these award shows, you don't expect to see them in a new film any longer. Now, I am thinking, is there going to be some kind of declaration that these actors are AI actors of a actor you love? And I'm trying to figure out how that will appeal to an audience. Because I'm talking about artificial companionship is a real thing now. We are talking about, there's this app people are using now. You have a artificial boyfriend or girlfriend or something that learns you and be talking to you on your phone and ask you how you're doing and all that. And I'm thinking, with regards to movies and movie stars, even when they are gone, will there be something for us as an audience to feel that, okay, I would really want to watch it anymore?
Well, I find it hard to, I don't know how the audience will be able to take it.
Would you take
it's
it?
It's a scary.
Would you take it?
I don't think I will. Part of the appeal of some of these movies is, okay, this is the last chance I get to see this person do this sort of thing. You know, at the back of my mind, every time I watch a Denzel movie, I'm like, okay, he's going to be in a wheelchair soon or something. You know, can he do Equalizer 4? I don't think by the time he can do Equalizer 5, you know, I'm beginning to see that his time is going, you know, and I'm trying to get into the new actors, you know, into his son, David Washington, into the Donald Glovers. You know, I'm trying to get into the new people and see how it is. You know, so a situation where Denzel doesn't go away from on the screen, I think it's a disservice to the people who are coming after them, for an example. And
It's not even really about the service. I'm thinking more of, let's pretend, what's the name of this guy who did Miss Doubtfire? You know,
Robin Williams,
you know. So, would you want to watch a Miss Doubtfire 2 with Robin Williams when you know that he's not the one putting up the act, that it is a robot? Writing this guy. Okay, I think that's a fair answer. I think that you've answered my question, really. Because I know we have really overshot our time, but we'll soon round. Let's round, because for me, I just feel like I think it will work. For example, now we know that, like Glenn Close now, she said they've taken all her pictures, and all her expressions, smile, laugh, they take your picture, take it left, take it right, and then they can recreate it in a film. But at least her fans know that she's alive. So all that thing is going to do is to save her the work of having to go and make those expressions, and she can get some financial reward from it. Mm-hmm. That's the way I see it. But the moment they say that, you know, the actor is no more, and then you want to, you know, because you have the footage and maybe contracts have been signed or something, you feel you want, I don't know how audiences are going to take that. I don't know if I'm a movie director, if I'm a Martin Scorsese, am I Christopher Nolan? Do I want to do that? I don't know. But I know that if it will make money, people will do it.
Yes, but I think we're going to have like everything new, we're going to have a new set of directors who are good AI directors, so to speak.
Yeah.
Who can, you know, get, because as much as I say I won't like it, I'm not of the generation coming. What they would like.
That's
some
right.
Some of them might not care. You know, they might say, hey, they want to see, they know he's dead, but they don't care. They want him to keep, and who knows? Who knows what they want? But I personally, I'm old school.
Do you remember when Nat King Cole did a song with it? That is posthumous.
His daughter.
Unforgettable with Natalie Cole. The audience received it. They knew that Nat King Cole. But although it was made public, that it's not like his voice came from
Course.
It was made it was made public that it was his voice.
The hologram.
Yeah, but at the end of the day. Anyways, dude, I know that this AI in movies, you know, since we normally talk about the movies, I don't think it's going to go away very soon. There will be more discussions. I'm even thinking how it's going to affect our own home industry, like Nollywood, in the future. I mean, for someone like Tyler Perry to say he is chilling on his $800 million studio that he wanted to grab, because the studio was meant to do some effects.
You can send me some of that money. this is chilling and using the money. You can send me some of that money.
He will invest.
I will use it to good use.
Anyways, I know there's always so much more to talk about, but because of time, we're going to just wrap this up. And thank you for listening to Real Talk Extra, everybody. And myself and Onyeka will be back next week. Onyeka, We know the degree for no bar.
No. Including AI.
No. We know they agree for AI. All right, man.
All right, man. Love our lives. Peace. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Real Talk Extra podcast. You can read about some of the conversations that we have about this podcast on realtalkextra.com. You can leave your vocal or written comments at the show notes area, or you can send us an email at podcasts@realtalkextra.com. Thank you once again for listening, and we'll be back next week with a new conversation.